We'd like to welcome you to listen to an hour about Nikola Tesla. Our website is
hello-earth.com.
And this is hour one with John McGinnis, who was the past president for the International Tesla Society from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hello, John.
Hello, Curtis, and thanks for having me on the show. And hello, everybody who is listening and is a Tesla fan, because I've been looking forward to coming back on radio. Many of you know I hosted a program for about 13 years on the Talk Radio Network. It was called the Extraordinary Science Radio Hour. And during that hour, we would discuss all sorts of Tesla technology. And now I have the privilege of coming back and visiting with you and Curtis and talking about Tesla once again. I had been away from everything for over 10 years since I left the International Tesla Society. The corporation went bankrupt and broke, and all sorts of naughty things occurred. Albeit not with me, but I had started to lose my sight, and things were getting very precipitous with me, so I put it over to someone else to carry on the tradition, and it never took off. In fact, it went backwards, and it no longer exists. But now I've rekindled much of what we were doing before. And instead of the International Tesla Society, we are now the American Tesla Society, which is far more appropriate than international. Many of you that have studied Tesla would know that he was very American. He was as American as Mickey Mantle. And unfortunately, he was basically shipped out of this country for people to forget, for people to never remember again. But we won't allow that to happen, will we, Curtis?
No, that's what we're doing here.
Well, I am so glad that you have a program, and I'm glad that it's one that is easily reached by anybody with an interest in Tesla. And I am glad to say that we are also inaugurating a new site. It's called the American TeslaSociety.org. I'd suggest you go to it. The site will continue to grow and expand, and there will be a lot of things that you'll see between Curtis's site and our site. So for those that care, go take a look, but a whole lot more will be appearing in short order. Now, I wanted to get through that, Curtis, because people are wondering what happened to me. And since I lost my vision and I got very sick, I've been out of the picture for about 10 years. But I am coming back, and I almost feel like Rocky.
Great.
There's nothing I enjoy more than talking about Tesla, doing Tesla things, and meeting Tesla people. There's so much of everything we do, day by day. Every time you flip a switch, you can thank Dr. Tesla. And that's the type of man he was. He was way ahead of his time. But the whole 19th century, that was Nikola Tesla. He had the greatest inventions known by man. And the world is running on them even as we speak. The very fact that you're listening to this, and I used to be on regular radio, network radio, but all those little stations, all those towers that you see as you're driving down the highway, you can thank Dr. Tesla for that. And I call him doctor because indeed he was. He was a doctor of mechanics and electronics and electricity, and what he's done is so massive, it's going to take many shows to discuss everything. But I have an able correspondent that I'm on the air with today, And it's such a pleasure, Curtis, to speak with you and those that are tuning in.
Well, this is going to be wonderful. And it's nice that you are from Colorado Springs.
Well, you know, Curtis, when we talk about Colorado Springs, it's not only the place where Tesla came and conducted his greatest experiments, but this is where the free energy movement began. No matter where you are in the world, it all began here in Colorado Springs in 1899 to 1900. And during that short span of time, Tesla accomplished so much. And in our websites, there's always lots of information about Tesla. But the world is becoming green, and the technology that he was refining and producing started here in Colorado Springs back in 1899. A lot of people in the world didn't know it at the time, but indeed what he was doing was paving the way, and much of what he did can be reincorporated in today's scheme of technology. I'd like to first say that when he came here, his whole concept was to harness lightning. And then when he found it to be so evasive and unreliable, he had to give up on it. But in the meantime, while trying to harness lightning, he developed the coherer, an ability to pick up a lightning storm even before it came. I know some ranchers and farmers in Nebraska and Oklahoma that are using coherers to tell them when there's a storm that's approaching. A lot of times you can't tune in the weather station, but if you've got a coherer, you will know. And it's actually a response to the electrical activity in the atmosphere, and it's captured in a vacuum tube. It's an amazing device. And it's just one of these day-by-day things that Tesla brought forth. But at the same time, he called it kind of trivial. It wasn't the big thing that he was doing, but certainly it contributed to many of the technologies that are out there today. And I do want to say that after he gave up on lightning, he then wanted to go into the wireless transmission of electricity. And where here in Colorado Springs we have a park, it's called Memorial Park. It has a big veterans memorial on it. It's got a firefighters memorial on it. And it's got a small placard, for lack of a better word for it, noting that Tesla had once established his laboratory here. But when the park was first formed, and I believe that was back in 1918, it was named after him. But after a while, his name goes off, and Memorial Park continues to survive. But the Colorado Springs Historical Society can give you more information about that. But nonetheless, he established his laboratory here. He put in his magnifying transmitter here. The idea was to transmit electricity using no wires. And this has confounded a lot of people because no one has been able to match it. And I've studied about it quite a bit, and I think I probably have as good a idea as to how it worked as anybody out there. And my perspective is different. It's different from many others. But some of the normal concepts that people think of when they think of wireless electricity, they're imagining it going through the air. And if that was so, there'd be a lot of people that would be fried, because we can't take electricity like that. But I will tell you how we did it. He had this magnifying transmitter and positioned here in Memorial Park in Colorado Springs. and he had set up a bank of light bulbs up in a place called Palmer Park, and that's north of Colorado Springs, or I said Palmer Park, I mean Palmer Lake. And on one of our foothills here, he put up a bank of bulbs. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to transmit electricity from here to there. He had an assistant called Zito, and he had some observers at the station where the light bulbs were. And on his command, Zito would fire the transmitter, and immediately the bulbs would light up. Well, it came time for that, and when the time arrived, he signaled to Zito, throw the switch, and immediately more than a million volts was going into the ground. Now, when that occurs, when you are putting massive amounts of energy into the ground, you call it a charged ground plane. Now, we all know that the ground can hold electricity. This is where electricity wants to go. That's where lightning goes. It goes into the ground. Well, at any rate, once he did this, the array lit up, and that was some 26 miles away as the crow flies. And this proved conclusively that you can see using no wires. Now, the way that it was accomplished is that the power itself, and just to give you a quick idea of how this is all done, we have a thing in electricity that we call resistance. And when you drop electricity onto a wire, the more you put on, the more resistance develops until finally the wire or the conductor reaches a stage that we call saturation. It just can't hold anymore. And when that happens, you can't put any more on there. You can't get it any further than what it already may be. But with Tesla, with a charged ground plane and a whole new different idea about the way things work, he was able to transmit that electricity 26 miles away. Here's how it did. There's a thing in that we have nowadays, and these are called silicon chips. And the unique thing about silicon chips is this. The more electricity we put on it, the more conductive it becomes. And the ground itself is about 98% silica, if not more. So the ground is highly conductive. And when he is launching all of this power into the ground becomes a charged plane. And the real secret was taking it back out of the ground. That's what's been lost, is the ability to take that power and pull it back out of the ground. And Tesla used a lot of techniques that nature emulates itself. He had used a violet beam that he shot up into the ionosphere. Now, the ionosphere is a layer of ions, and all of these ions are of a positive nature. And somehow, he was able to attract these ions back down to the charged earth plane, and this caused a reaction in which the electricity came back out and illuminated the bulbs. So that in itself is a simple explanation as to how it went. It's not the only explanation. There are a lot of good books out there that poise some other ideas. But that's my idea, and that's what I think is really going on. And so that's how it was done. And when he went back to New York, he went to work on Long Island, and he established his tower there and was in the middle of construction. He didn't have too far to go ran out of money and tried to get more. And he got bamboozled by J.P. Morgan. And there was a group of investors from Chicago that had said they were coming out to see him and rescue the project. But I believe that this group of investors was something that was contrived by some special interests that were somehow connected with J.P. Morgan or Edison or some of these other competitors in the field. And they just gave him this so he would feel relaxed about money is on the way. You've all heard the check is in the mail, and that's what he thought. And the check never did arrive. The investors from Chicago never arrived. And what became of them, Garsh only knows, but that is also what led me to believe that somebody contrived a scheme to fool him into thinking that he had help on the way. Now, I'm going to tell you that as our site, theamericantesla.org, grows, I'll be showing a photo of the tower as it's about one-fourth of the way being pulled over. And there's so much information about that tower and his lab there that I don't want to get into it at this particular show. But that'll be something that'll be coming up, and I'll elucidate about it and give you a finer idea of what caused them to tear it down, and was there truth to any of the reasons why it was condemned. But let's go back here to Colorado Springs, where I'm at, and I'm telling you, in this day and age, there are so many people that are now interested in what we call independent energy, or some call it free energy. But we're using solar, we're using the wind, and in some cases there are inventors that are coming to our conference that will display other techniques that involve Tesla technology that are power producers. In one such case, we have a fellow that's coming up from Fort Worth, and he has a device that produces instant steam. There's no waiting for the boiler to boil it up. A 40-horsepower boiler will take as much as 1 to 3 days to bring water up to a temperature that would produce steam. But this man is able to produce it immediately. And he has this interfaced with a 30-kilowatt generator. And he has a closed circulatory system for the water. That's just one of the inventions that is coming here to the 2009 American Tesla Society Symposium. This is the inaugural symposium of the American Tesla Society, and in deference to Nikola Tesla himself, this is a medaled event. This will be the first time ever that a Tesla Medal for Science Achievement will be awarded. And the people that are going to select the conferee, the person who wins the medal, are going to be those that come to the conference itself. You'll want to go to the page to get the information. And as the page grows, it'll show you how to make your reservation. The conference will be conducted on July 9th, 10th, and 11th. And on the night of the 10th, we're going to have a banquet. It'll be a Saturday night. We'll have all sorts of people here, and we'll have all sorts of entertainment. But the highlight of the evening will be the award of the first inaugural Tesla medallion that will be awarded by the American Tesla Society. And you don't want to miss it, because there are so many good technologies that will be here to compete for that prize. And, of course, if you're an inventor or you know an inventor and you would like them to know about what we're doing, have them go to our website. We have a link there right to our email. It's info@AmericanTeslaSociety. And you'll be able to drop us a line and let us know that you're interested. Let us know what kind of technology you have. We're not interested in trivial things. If you've got the flying lawnmower, take it somewhere else. I admire the technology, but it's too trivial. And we are at such a critical time in our country and in our world that these gadgets are not what we're after. We're after things that can change our very lives. And you're going to be seeing some when you come to the conference. And again, the dates are July 9th, 10th, and 11th. And there's no finer place in the world to be in the summertime than in Colorado Springs. We're right at the foot of America's favorite mountain, Pikes Peak. And this is where Joyce Kilmer wrote her famous song, America the Beautiful. And when you get out here, you'll understand why this is the most beautiful city in America. And we want you to be here. And we want you to enjoy the conference right with us. So please join us, contact us, and I'll be leaving some other email addresses so you can get all the information you need, and especially those of you that are inventors. And we're not looking for the fellow that might be coming from the University of whatever. Many of our best inventors are those people who have taken it up as a crusade of their own and have developed their own technology without any rules, without any constraints. But the thing about it is they're independent. They're not locked into anybody. And therefore, it's a free expression of not only the technology, but of love. Because love is a critical factor. I love the world. I love my fellow man. And I love Nikola Tesla. And I think any problem can be solved with the technology that lies within us. And Nikola Tesla had espoused that many, many times. He was just a great individual. And I want to talk about him a little bit more because I know so much about him. And folks, I'm going to be publishing a book, and it'll be coming out later this year. But the name of the book is The Truth About Tesla. Everything you ever heard that might be a little sketchy, maybe not enough veracity to it, or just plain cockamamie, this book will kind of straighten the record out from the side of Nikola Tesla. Now, I want to reflect back on Tesla as a young boy. He had a marvelous relationship with his mother. His mother was an inventor, and a lot of people don't know that. And his father was a Serbian Orthodox priest. And they lived in a small town called Simlja. And it's in this area where Tesla has his roots. And it's in this area where he learned to invent at the knee of his mother. And the things that he would do and the things that she had done. She was an uneducated woman. But at the same time, she looked at nature, she looked at the problems around her, and she brought forth solutions. And she was quite renowned for her sewing ability. And I know these days people want to criticize those that would lower themselves so low as to maybe sew their own button on or something like that. Back in those days, if you wanted a new suit, you wanted a new pair of pants or something like that, many times it was done right at home. And the women that crafted it were so expert in what they were doing. But there were men that were doing it too. But let's say that that was an area where women really excelled and really contributed so much to day-to-day living. And Tesla's mom had invented a device that, on a recent trip to Japan just a couple years ago, I still see that device for sale. And I think of that little Serbian woman and how she developed it. It just makes sense. It's a beautiful thing, and I'll tell you what it is. At the time that Tesla was brought up, most everything, the lights, the heating, and so forth, was done with kerosene. And the containers for those kerosene, or the kerosene containers themselves, were pretty heavy. They would be 50 pounds or more. And they would be in a canister, something, about 8 inches in diameter and maybe 3 to 4 feet tall. And the kerosene would be stored in that container. And if you were to go to lift it, like I said, you were going to heft about 50 pounds. And that's nothing that anybody can handle too readily. But she came up with a leverage strap. And this leverage strap and the way it configured to the cylinder was really a marvel when I think about it. It was simple. It was something that you see it now, and it doesn't really cross your mind as to what it is, but you can appreciate it if you had to pick up and fill the lamps or fill the stove and do all of these other things that kerosene was the fluid that was used to produce either heat or light. And this strap that she configured with the cylinder went over her shoulder, but it also allowed her to pivot the cylinder, so with the spout she could fill the lamps and she could fill the stove and so forth. And it's so magnificent, but in this day and age we hardly give it a blink of the eye. But women back in those days were they didn't always have a man around to help them, and they had a tremendous amount of tasks that were probably beyond the strength of most of our modern-day women. But in those days, she made a great contribution, and that technology spread throughout Europe and the Eastern Bloc nations, and then eventually got as far as the Orient. So she had developed a reputation, and Tesla had seen that. And she had a special relationship with him. She had lost her older son, and he no longer was the focus, so it went on to Nikola. And they would go down. There was a stream that ran right by. It was in a mountain community, folks. I want to tell you that as well. And there were streams and so forth that came along their area where they lived, and he spent a lot of time there with his mother. And he also did some things that, again, even at a tender age, he was able to skip a rock 5 times. Well, I've been out to the lake, and I've taken a smooth stone, and I've tried to do that. But try to take a rock and make it skip 5 times or more, and you're going to be in rare company if you can. So this was something that Tesla, just not by brawn, but by technique, was able to do that with a stone. He got his first invention when he was about 12 years old, and this was a bladeless pump, and the town itself had caught on fire. And they had no way to really fight the fire outside of using buckets. And Tesla had come up with this bladeless pump. and it was something that he configured as a lad, playing in a culvert. And as the water would come through, and I'm sure all of us at one time or another might have played with running water, where you get maybe some popsicle sticks together and you make little paddles and the water comes through and it makes the paddle turn maybe once or so, but then it kind of rocks. It doesn't rotate any longer. And that's the state that you go to, and you just become stymied. And instead of that, Tesla had taken some scraps. He had an uncle that was a carpenter, and he had some discards, and he had some round discards. They were discs. And he put the disc into the water, and the disc started to rotate and rotate and rotate. And he got the idea and put together a bladeless type of pump. Now, when the town had caught on fire, and his technology had already been developed a number of years earlier, but they had to find a way to get water from the creek up to where they were fighting the fire. That is the method they had used. They had used his bladeless pump, and it saved the town. It was a magnificent achievement, but it was only the beginning for Nikola Tesla, who was always encouraged by his mother. You know, well, what else can you do? What else would you like to try? And this is something we should be doing with our children today, is encouraging them and telling them. Many times a child will be held back because they feel they lack mathematical skills, or they lack the vision. And that was the key, was Tesla's vision. And his vision was a product of his mother instilling it in him that he could look at a problem and envision a solution. And he had refined it so much that he would concoct a device, test it, see it operate, go back in a couple days and see if it was still standing on its own. And he had that vision to do something even before he manifested it by constructing it. This is an art. This is something that is not only art, but great talent and a great mind. And Nikola Tesla had what we call a photographic memory, a photographic memory in that he could look at something and he would only have to look at it once. It gave him an ability in school. And then later in upper education, when he went to the Polytechnic Institute in Prague, and I take that back, in Austria, slipped up there, but he went to Prague as well. But these polytechnic institutes that were incorporated throughout Europe were what we would call our modern-day colleges. And they would go in, and if somebody had great mechanical skill or skills in maybe carpentry or something like that, they would go, and guild masters and professors would teach these young students how to refine their skills and get better. And unlike a lot of students, Tesla was one that, after he got settled in, the professors themselves learned a great deal from Tesla. He graduated. And following graduation, he went to work for a phone company in Budapest, Hungary. And they started to work there and wired up that town. Alexander Graham Bell's telephone was coming alive. His understanding of electricity and electromotive forces gave him a distinct advantage. And he performed so well that he was later hired to work in London, where he pursued the same area of technology. And following that, again, because he was doing so well, his renown began to build, and he got hired by the Edison Company to work at their power facility in Paris. And there he, again, he broke the mold. His ability to work with the transmission of electricity was something that he had encompassed, but he wanted to improve. And his idea of the rotating magnetic field is what led to the incorporation of AC electricity. He had all sorts of renown in Europe. He was a very generous man. He had a lot of things in his youth that he did, a lot of strong relationships with his fellow students, many of them who had come to America behind him. They wanted to go wherever he went. And there was a lighthearted side to Nikola Tesla. On weekends, when there were no classes, he would play poker. And he would generally win all the chips, but he was kind enough to return all of the money. His ability to count and his photographic ability to see what was going on in the game gave him an advantage over his fellow card players. And but his morality was one of a great attitude, the golden rule. All of the things that we incorporate today was incorporated in his upbringing. His father, as I said, was a Serbian Orthodox priest. He was a very humble man. He was a man that had a lot of what we would call parishioners or followers would come to his church. And it was a time in the life where the old was making way for the new. The old world, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, it was coming apart at the seams. Now countries were being formed, their borders became more important, and people more or less identified themselves more with the country, where before they identified more with the language. The French were the French no matter where they were. The Slavs were the Slavs no matter where they were. But then as the European continent became more articulate and borders became more defined, people then took on the mantles of these various they became their themselves. There were the Serbians, the Croats, Czechoslovakians, the Hungarians, and so forth. All of them were kind of related. Their languages are actually somewhat similar. The whole peninsula, they call it the Balkan Peninsula, and it runs from Greece up through Macedonia and over into Serbia, Croatia, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and so forth. All of those borders became refined, and then the pride, as the Greeks became very proud of their roots, and everybody in themselves became proud of their individual roots. But at the same time, there was the interchangeable relationship between all of these people. It was a very fertile area, and it was a time that the world had when individualism was finally coming to the top. And this is when Europe began to shine. The French Revolution, the defeat of Napoleon, all of these things were going on, but they later or subsequently led to the developments of some of the best technology in the world. So that was the nest egg. That's the nest egg that Tesla came out of. He established himself very successfully throughout Europe, worked for Edison in Paris, decided that he wanted to come to the United States and was given a letter from the manager of the Edison facility in Paris, a letter of introduction that he brought with him when he came to America. Now, indeed, he came with barely a cent in his pocket. I think there was like 7 cents. He had a few other objects that were close to him. And he climbs on that ship and he lands here. But the relationship in the Serbian community was one that was open to him. He was assisted in finding housing. And he was intent on working for Thomas Edison, who he considered the greatest inventor in the world. And at the time, Edison would have to be credited with that. But who would know that he would overshadow Edison in the technology he brought forth? Edison was a very, and like many inventors get, I don't know. I have found that it's kind of part of the thing that once an inventor gets out, many times if they've got a real hot item, they'll get it out there. They start making money. They get a little arrogant about it and so forth. And Edison was this to a T. He kept Tesla waiting in the anteroom for 10 days before he finally interviewed him. But that was all right, because while he was in that waiting room, visitors to Edison went right by him, and he got a chance to meet Robert and Catherine Johnson. These were the publishers of a magazine called the Century Magazine, and it was their efforts that played a big part in Tesla's development as it went on. But as Tesla finally got the interview with Edison, Edison had read the letter, and like I said, it was a letter of recommendation and introduction. And in the letter, and I'm just going to paraphrase it, but he basically says, "Dear Mr. Edison, this is Nikola Tesla, a scientist like you, and a man that has the ability to change the world like you." And Edison didn't like comparatives, and was a little jealous that his own manager over in Paris thought so much of Tesla that he would mention him in the same breath. But he found that Tesla measured up to all of that and more. So when he finally called in Tesla, he did the interview. He had one question that he asked Tesla. He said, "Look, Tesla, what are you going to do for me?" And Tesla replied, "I'm going to refine your dynamo." Edison had about a dozen different dynamos. These are generators, and they were in various sizes. And concept, and in this particular show, what I'd like to bring out is concept, how you can see one thing one way, and I can see something, same thing, but get a different idea from it. Well, Edison was so proud of his dynamos, the very fact that Tesla would say he would refine them and make them better, Edison had the idea that he had brought them to their optimum. When they ran, they threw sparks and fire, and, you know, they were impressive. They made all these sparks and so forth. And to Edison, what he was seeing was power. But what Tesla saw was a waste of power. All those sparks were going aside. They weren't being consumed and used. And Tesla, for nearly 2 years, worked at refining all of these dynamos and got them refined. He developed a brushless system, which again is a Tesla invention. But no longer were those dynamos confined to the power that you would see because of the sparks. Now those sparks were being turned into additional power. So everything that Edison had became more powerful, more productive. And who could turn anybody down? When they're doing something that well, you've got to tip your hat to it. One of the items that comes up frequently, and I'm sure you've heard about it before, is that when Tesla told Edison that he would refine and improve his dynamos, Edison told him, if you can do that, I'll give you $50,000. Well, there was no question about it. When Tesla had completed the task, he put him on the bench. He had them tested, and indeed, they were magnificent. They did so much more than what they were capable of before Tesla began on them. And Edison comes into the room. And remember now, Edison was sort of arrogant with most everybody. To those that were in the upper echelon of wealth and power and so forth, he was one of the boys. But if they worked for him, he had an aura about him that he thought he was unchallengeable. That, you know, you're working for him, you're not doing anything that he couldn't actually do himself. So Tesla calls him down. All of the generators, dynamos, are laid out on benches. And he said, Mr. Edison, I've completed the job. Let's test them. He tested them, and indeed he kept his word. And then he was given a compliment by Edison. Edison had told him, he said, Nick, this is absolutely wonderful. You really accomplished what you said you were going to do. You did it. I just want to thank you, and I want to thank you very proudly. And Tesla said, well, thank you, Mr. Edison, but the thing I'm most interested in is the $50,000 you promised me when I started this task out. And Edison remarked back to him, he kind of chuckled. He says to Tesla, he said, you know, Nick, you just don't get it. When you came in and I gave you this job and I gave you that task, I was only joking about the $50,000. This is common American humor, and you're misconstructing it. I never really intended to give you $50,000. It was just a figure of speech. Well, Tesla, he was upset, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. He stormed out, and Tesla cut all ties with Edison at that very moment. He stormed out. He started to search immediately for work. They had no unemployment back in those days. And he finds a job with the New York subway system. And he's down in a ditch with a shovel digging like everybody else. But as I said at the beginning of the story, he had a couple of patrons that he got to know. And they were Robert and Catherine Johnson. And they were very, very impressed with Tesla and extremely impressed with his idea of putting the direct current delivery system aside and changing our electrical delivery system to AC, or alternating current. They touted his patents. There was a total of about 40 patents that constructed the AC patent, and they showed them to a friend of theirs, and that was a fellow by the name of George Westinghouse. Westinghouse himself was a great inventor. He invented Pullman cars, as an example. He also did some things with rubber, but I won't get into him. Today's not the day. But what he did is he came to Tesla while Tesla was at work. Tesla was in a ditch with a shovel on his hands. And Catherine Johnson came over and introduced George Westinghouse to Tesla. And he said, or she said, Nick, this is George Westinghouse. He has a high degree of interest in your alternating current. Well, Tesla put down the shovel, looked up, and introduced himself back to Westinghouse. And Westinghouse said, well, let's just get right down to it. I understand you have that patent, and it's available, and I'd like to buy it. And Tesla said, well, it is for sale. And Westinghouse said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll offer you $50,000 for those patents. This was an insult to Nikola Tesla, who took a lot of umbrage to it. He turned his back on him and started to move down the ditch. He was scowling, and Westinghouse saw that he had made a great mistake by trying to lowball Tesla. And he yelled to him over the noise of the hammers and the shovels and everything else that was going on. He goes, Nikola, please, please. And so Tesla turned around and came back. And he said, if $50,000 isn't what you want, what do you want? And Tesla said, I want $1 million. George Westinghouse hesitated shortly, but knew that if he didn't come back with something positive, Tesla was going to move on to the next guy. And so Westinghouse said, I'll take you up on it, and we'll get together and form a contract and a purchase agreement. And Tesla rebounded and said, okay. And at that very moment, Tesla was given a pittance. It was something that kind of spiked the deal. Now, the pittance was probably a couple of $1,000s. No one knows for sure. But what Tesla did is he moved out of this house in which he was staying at over in New Jersey and moved in to the Waldorf Astoria. That's what convinces me that the pittance had to be significant. Of course, in today's money, a couple $1,000s is hardly worth anything. But in those days, it was. And soon he had his $1 million. But soon he also had a, let's call it a development contract with George Westinghouse. So this was the beginning of a relationship that was the most significant relationship that Tesla ever had. Him and George Westinghouse were going to change the world, and that AC power was going to be at the base of it. And just an aside on AC power, it was first successfully demonstrated at the Gold King Mine here in Colorado, where Tesla had run a dynamo from a stream to the Gold King Mine. It was a distance of about nearly 3 miles. It was unheard of at that time in history for anybody to conduct electricity to that distance. But it was his dynamo that did it, and the accolades that he received stimulated him into wanting to relight the world and rewire the world. But he had a lot of work ahead of him before he would do that. He had set his sights on Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls, incidentally, was discovered by some explorers who got led to it by an Indian guide. And when they saw Niagara Falls, they couldn't believe it. And Curtis and listeners, if you can imagine how beautiful Niagara Falls must have looked back in those days, and we're talking about the early 1800s, mm-hmm. It was just probably the highlight of any explorer's life. Well, one of the things that they did is there was a lot of artwork. There were artists from all over the world that went through the forest, climbed the hills, and everything they had to do to come into a area where they could see the falls. And those paintings were rampant. They went around the world, and everybody talked about Niagara Falls. Well, Niagara Falls, there was a picture of it. And when Tesla was a young boy, before he headed off to, let's call it the upper level schools, the Polytechnic Institutes, he was in a level of about early high school. He had seen that picture, and he showed it to his mother. And in one of their many conversations, he showed it to her, and he said, "Mom, someday I'm going to harness this falls." He was going to harness it all right, and he did. Well, he needed the help of George Westinghouse to do it, but he had designed his own generators, and he worked on a project at the time. There was a governor of New York, and the governor was really looking for someone to harness the falls. It had been attempted, and there were many failures connected with it. There were people that tried to do it with direct current, and they were failures. Everyone had thought it would be impossible to harness the falls. Well, through the money of George Westinghouse and the skill and vision of Nikola Tesla, he set about his work. Finally, he completes the work, and he's ready to send a transmission of electricity from Niagara Falls all the way over to Buffalo, New York. And the real funny thing about all of this, folks, is that people had figured it was so impossible. There was no media there when he did it. Nobody believed he could do it. But he did it. And when the power flowed to Buffalo, New York, and the lights came on, and then the power was channeled into the streetcar system, people then knew who did it. And Tesla became world famous at that time. And he was interviewed by a reporter. And the reporter asked Tesla how he did it. And Tesla, and this was his humor, said, "The Martians taught me." And he was being glib. But that was a moment where he said something that would come back on him, because it was published that aliens directed him on how to do it. And it was only an innocent, casual, glib remark that he made to a reporter that was picked up, but it would later come back and be used to attack him. They would attack him as being weird. They would attack him as being a freaky scientist. But that wasn't the real case. But when you see people, one book, I don't know, Curtis, if you ever read Commander X's books on Tesla, well, you know, these are, you know, fringe type of literature. But that's what walked Tesla into the fringe element. And he was fringy, but he was a very decent, kind, and good human being. But they had used his character and his remarks to assassinate his character when they needed to do it, because there was a big thing ahead. And that thing that was lying ahead, and this here precedes it all, was the war of the currents. And the currents were AC versus DC.
And,
it was.
And we're about out of time.
Okay.
We're coming up on the last few seconds of this hour.
Okay.
And we'll have you back again next Thursday.
Week. Next Thursday.
Next Thursday, we'll record another hour, and we'll be doing this, and we'll just keep on going.
We'll keep on going. There's lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about Nikola Tesla. And John McGinnis, thank you very much. And you'll see this posted soon, and we'll pick this up next week.
Okay, and thanks again, Curtis, for the opportunity, and thanks again to the listening audience.
All right, thanks, John. Talk to you then.
You bet.
Bye.
Bye-bye.